You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
And welcome to ESO Pro. I'm your host, Nicholas Allhelm, and this time around, the Pro Wrestling Roundtable returns for another draft episode. And this time, we're choosing the very best pay-per-views and specials available to watch on the WWE Network. We've got a lot to choose from, but we're going to talk about some great shows, some great matches, and some great wrestlers, I think, tonight. But before we do, let's introduce our crew for this week. First up, Mr. Alex Autry.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
Pretty good. I think we're going to have some fun with this one.
Should be interesting. I've got my list. It's not quite as long as some of the other ones that I've done in the past, but I figure if I don't have enough because everybody else has already picked them, then I made the right list.
Fair enough. And the man who will almost certainly choose every Texas-based pay-per-view he can, John Morgan Neal.
WrestleMania 17, woo! How is everybody doing? I'm Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I am John Neal, the feel it down deep Neal.
New nickname every week.
I am so looking forward to him hosting the next show.
I know, yes. Next time around, Texas Wrestling with the host, John Morgan Neal. Surprise, surprise! I don't think we can find a better host for that one. All right, John Morgan.
Yes.
Due to my random selection process of all three of our names, you get the first pick.
Oh, cool. That works for me. And I won't be picking a Texas-based one to start with because I'm going to go with another passion of mine, wrestling-wise, and that is tag teams. And if you're going to go with the tag team pay-per-view, you got to go with the Memorial Cup, Jim Crockett Sr. Memorial Cup Tag Team Tournament, which I loved all three of them. And I have them, actually own them on a little shady way. Anyway, I absolutely loved it. I mean, I was always a tag team guy. And then, you know, here's a whole pay-per-view dedicated to tag teams. Of course, later on, I discovered that it was just a real tribute to Jim Crockett Jr. because the territory used to be a tag team territory entirely. Mm-hmm. And so this was a homage to that. And I mean, all of the best teams and maybe not as best teams, but still good teams that were available in all of the NWA that weren't already in WWE or AWA, we're in this thing, and anybody who loves tag team wrestling's got to love this.
The Memorial Cups were really interesting because they almost predate the pay-per-view stuff, but they were a big event. The first one was a two-day event. Yeah. I think day one was in Charlotte and day two was in Atlanta, or maybe I have those backwards.
You're actually incorrect. The first one is the one-day event. The second one is the two-day event.
Second one's a two-day event. Okay. But they were really unique, although a lot of times there were things that would happen that didn't make any sense.
Yes.
Who was it? The Fantastics, who won a match to get into the next round and then lost a match to get into that same round, and then subsequently were not in the next round. But it was cool. It was also cool. I think you had a great world title matches as well during that tournament too. So I believe you had Ric Flair versus Nikita Koloff on one of the pay-per-views, and you had Nikita basically become a fan favorite at the second one.
Mm-hmm.
So the dedication to
Magnus the superpowers were formed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Superpowers were formed in one, I believe, right?
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, Magnum TA was involved in the finals of all three Crockett Cups.
Interesting.
Because he lost, I think he was teaming with either Ronnie Garvin or Brad Armstrong to the Road Warriors in the first one. He came down to the ring to be with Dusty and Nikita in the second one, and he was the manager of Sting and Luger for the third one.
Interesting. I don't like the second one simply because in order for the Superpowers to win, the Road Warriors had to lose to the Midnight Express, which is completely unbelievable to me ever.
Excuse me, hello, the human highlight film of professional wrestling.
Hell yeah.
Beautiful Bobby, Sweet Stan, you've been outvoted, sir.
See,
2-1.
I disagree. I agree with you. I didn't like the finish because the Midnight Express didn't win it.
Exactly. Wait,
well, they had to lose to the Superpowers, but
oh yeah, but see, they could have went in and they could have taken on Luger and Blanchard, you know, Road Warriors. I mean, World Warriors. Horseman. My brain just went totally out there somewhere.
Again, I'm looking forward to him hosting next time.
It's going to be something else.
You spend the first 10 minutes talking about anything but Texas wrestling. That's my subject. All right, so Crockett Cups, we will let you take all three there, even though that completely breaks the rules of the competition, John Morgan.
You suddenly changed the rules on us by suddenly allowing the NXT stuff to come in the day after we've already made our list. So,
hey, you can add them to your list at any time. I just realized that those were not separated on the WWE Network channel.
All right, fair enough.
All right, Alex.
Okay, fine. I'll just number two next turns. I'll take number two and number three.
No, you can have all three. It's okay.
No, you can. That's fine. One of the things I did when I did my roster was to pick either pay-per-views that had amazing matches that must be seen, had something that was very crucial to turning points in professional wrestling, or were just awful. And the first one I'm going to mention on my list is In Your House 16, which is Calgary Stampede.
Oh, I love Calgary Stampede.
Calgary Stampede. It was basically the creation of Canada as Bizarro World for the WWF. And the main event was Steve Austin and his team of Super Patriots, including the Patriot, and others who completely escaped me. Ken Shamrock was on their team, and the Road Warriors taking on the Hart Foundation
and Goldust.
And Goldust.
Doom.
No, it's the Road Warriors. No, believe me, they were in the Omni once. I saw them. They're the Road Warriors. Ah. Everybody drink.
But they were part of the Legion of Doom.
Yeah. Technically, so is Jake Roberts. Anyway. They went up against the Hart Foundation in the main event of In Your House, and you might as well have just put Bret Hart on a stamp at that point. That's how much of a hero he was in Canada for this match.
The Patriot wasn't in this match. Goldust was the Patriot's replacement in this match.
Oh, okay.
Because the Hype Foundation had eliminated the Patriot, I believe, beforehand. With beatdown monsters.
Well, why didn't the Patriot just contact the Trooper to help?
I don't know. Why didn't the Patriot just hand his mask to one of the other 18 people who played the Patriot over the last two decades?
Why didn't he bring in his friend, the Dark Patriot?
A little Doug Gilbert reference. Very nice. But this whole pay-per-view it's okay, but the main event is absolutely worth watching. As at the height of Bret Hart's villainous heelness, there he is, being given the royal treatment by the fans in a good way. And oh my God, the booing that was done on long-time fan favorites, the Legion and Shamrock and even Goldust. It had to be uncomfortable for everybody.
Yeah. Austin supposedly loved it because he got to be a heel again for one night only. But
yeah,
that's what he loves mostly, balls.
I will point out that there was a great Sasuke Taka Michinoku match on the undercard of this thing.
There was, wasn't there?
Awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the two times I think the great Sasuke has ever appeared in the WWE ring. But hey,
I think that's the first time that we ever see, well, I know for sure Natalya. It's the first time we ever see Natalya in a WWE ring. Whenever all the hearts get in the ring afterwards.
When she was what?
And I'm pretty sure TJ and probably baby Bulldog is there too. But I know Natalya is because I just saw that recently. And they're all in there. And I said, hey, that's Natty.
Yeah. And I apologize. It's actually Canadian Stampede, not Calgary.
Shame on you.
Whatever.
All right. My first pick. And I want to thank John Morgan because I really didn't think I was going to get this pick, is WrestleMania X7. Not to be confused.
Oh, I'm
with
sorry.
17.
Oh, my.
They don't have one of those. They have an X7 because 17 just isn't cool enough for WWE in the year 2001.
You did just take my second one. So.
Yeah, I wanted. I expected it to be a first one because in my mind, this is the greatest wrestling pay-per-view ever. So, top to bottom, this is a great card with, like, a perfect set of matches that are all...
Top to bottom.
Top to bottom. The worst match on this card is Taz and the APA versus the Right to Censor, and it's 3.5 minutes long. So
Gimmick Battle Royal.
Gimmick Battle Royal is an art piece. Like, nobody's business.
Got something caught in my throat there.
That match is genius. Genius, I say. No, this match is great. Jericho versus Regal starting it out. One of the best hardcore matches ever with Kane, Raven, and Big Show. Eddie Guerrero is actually in one of the weaker matches against Test. Anger Benoit, China squashing Ivory to finally win the women's championship for the first time. An amazing match between Shane and Vince McMahon. TLC 2. The gimmick
I was going to say that the 17 would be on the map if only for TLC 2.
Yeah, well,
if you're right that you have the incredible Shane bump, you've got, you know, a great main event between two guys that just had it all going on.
The finest Undertaker Triple H match ever as well. Sitting
That was a damn good match.
Yeah, Falls Count Everywhere match. That these two just did everything, and Undertaker, of course, won. Surprise, surprise at WrestleMania. Strange. But yeah, just top to bottom, this is one of the finest cards ever put on for professional wrestling, and it did, to my mind, it can't be beat for a level of quality from top to bottom. The fact that it went as long as it did, and it doesn't feel like it went as long as it did, is probably the greatest compliment I can give it. And the fact, and I'm sorry, the gimmick battle royale is a genius.
I love the gimmick battle royal.
The right guy won the gimmick battle royal. I'll give you that.
Oh, but Iron Sheik.
No, Michael Hayes should have won the gimmick battle royal.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Everything about that was just, it was a fun little thing. And bringing in Bobby and...
They brought in Bobby and
Gene. I mean, mm-hmm. Gene to do it. And, you know, and that was great. I mean, and probably not the good idea, the best idea, because... They're going to be better than your regular announce team, but...
No. You're talking about the era of my favorite announce team ever. So, with Jim Ross and Paul.
I was teasing. I love... they're good. Yeah, him and Heyman were awesome together.
You got to keep in mind, this is not...
I made a generic joke, okay? I'm not really... I love both Heyman and Ross, and they were perfect together because he would really wound up Ross, for real.
Yeah, I thought your favorite announced team was JBL and Michael Cole.
No.
I think you mean MAGA Cole. here's what I'll say about JBL and Michael Cole. For as terrible as JBL is 99% of the time, Night of Champions, that man got some really great one-liners thrown in there. I don't know if he hired a writer between Raw and that pay-per-view. I don't know, but that was the best JBL commentary I've ever seen. If only for, he didn't pay for his taxi.
Right. That was great. Yes, that was for, you know, JBL, when he is on, is good. He's really good. You know, I liked him on SmackDown.
Unfortunately, he's on about 4% of the time.
And that's exactly. And then I think he's, either he or somebody in his head is forcing him to force it.
Yeah.
Instead of being natural, it was really good about the taxi and all of a sudden, you know, I mean, he was on and it worked. But it, when he's trying to push it too hard, you know, you can't push it. It's got to be natural.
Yeah. And he was fine clotheslining from hell the heck out of everybody in Right Censor, WrestleMania X7. Just throwing that out. Bringing it back around. You're welcome.
Stevie Richards! Woo!
Steven Richards.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Yes. He was
finest Bull Buchanan WrestleMania match.
By the way, did you know Stevie Richards was a doctor? Psychologist.
Wait, he's a psychologist. Everybody knows
psychologist,
that.
Yeah.
Dr. Stevie. He left the WWE and became a psychologist and then went to work for TNA. Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows
it's
that.
It's quite obvious. All right, John Morgan, what's your next pick for today?
Alex hasn't made his pick, has
he? No,
it's your turn.
Canadian Stampede.
Oh, we talked about that, Mark.
That's easy. Now, my next choice. Uh-oh, wait a minute.
Kenna from Hell match. What?
Damn it, now I do want to add one on my list.
Okay, now, my next favorite is an oddity in the fact that it was...
Does it feature the oddities?
No. That would be awesome.
No, but I love the oddities. No, it's an oddity based on the fact that it is... a pay-per-view that was ostensibly put on by WWE, but it was not a WWE pay-per-view. It was ECW's One Night Stand.
I had that on my list.
It is just, you're talking about a show that is great from bottom to top. That is definitely one. It was very emotional. Paul ran it, so it had the real feel of ECW. He really captured it for that one night once more. It was a send-off to a lot of guys. And it was a total send-off to ECW for real. I mean, the real ECW. Yeah. And it just worked in every way.
Yeah, One Night Stand was just amazing. And I had it on my list as well. The backstory on that was really unique with Van Damme basically being the champion of it and saying, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this, which is really weird because, of course, it comes time and he's on crutches.
All right.
But, that was definitely something I think the only thing that I didn't like, I loved the Balls Mahoney Masato Tanaka match.
You mean Mike Awesome Masato Tanaka?
Was it Mike Awesome? It was Mike Awesome because it was a chair swinging event.
Yeah.
And they went crazy
yeah.
on each other. And the only thing I didn't like about it was the WWF wrestlers coming to invade it
yeah.
at the end.
The thing that this show always brings up to mind for me is that Mike Awesome, Masato Tanaka put on an amazing match. The Dudley Boys put on an amazing match against Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman in the main event. And Mike mm-hmm. Awesome and Masato Tanaka did not get jobs, and the Dudley Boys were fired. So.
Yeah. Well, and that was where the situation, you know, I guess it was a situation where Vince and his Pody, Dunn, just let Paul do it, and we all know what should happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we see what he did with ECW eventually. We see the people that he released and so on and so forth. So it was just, yeah, that is the unfortunate drawback of that pay-per-view. And I agree a bit. You know, the WCW guys should not have been involved at all, especially when, you know, of course, the ugly event with Blue Meanie. And all that and the other. So, yeah, that's the only mar on the thing.
There's a wonderful work shoot right smack dab in the middle of it, though. And that's when Paul Heyman gets on the mic and looks up at Edge and says, I'm going to say the two words that everybody in the WWF is afraid to say, Matt Hardy.
Yeah.
I loved that up until the point, you know, when Matt Hardy came back and really killed it with that interview.
He's good at that, Matt Hardy, killing things with interviews.
I had forgotten that Lance Storm faced Chris Jericho in the first match on that show.
Yep.
Oh, so good. With the appearance of not just the coolest, not just the best,
just incredible.
and we haven't mentioned Super Crazy Tajiri and Little Guido not getting nearly enough time, but still getting a pretty decent match in their, like, 6 or 7 minutes, whatever they had. So.
Yeah, that's another thing that's great about that pay-per-view is the fact that it really did, you know, just like ECW used to, give everybody a little something, you know. Mm. I mean, there was a lot of guys there that were getting, you know, a bit this chance to be on this big show and do their one last bit for, you know, ECW style.
Well, they very much focused on those kind of matches like the that are well known from their history, like Super Crazy Tajiri and Little Guido's Three Ways, or Awesome and Tanaka, or Benoit Guerrero, or Mysterio and Psychosis. So
yeah. And give the WWF credit on this one. When they were going to do this one time only, we're never bringing ECW back after this until the numbers come in.
Right.
When they did this, they're like, if we're going to have the Sandman in the main event, we got to give him the entrance. And they paid the licensing fee to use Enter Sandman.
Yep.
And, oh, it was so good.
Oh, it was.
So worth it.
It was. You know what? And I'll tell you, Vince just perplexes me sometimes.
Tell me about it.
And because he's so good sometimes, and then he's so bad. And I want to think that it's mostly Kevin Dunn in his ear that makes the bad. Not going to completely absolve Vince because everybody's, you know, nobody's perfect. But I think most of the really bad choices he makes is that Kevin somehow gets to him. But here's the deal. ECW, their ECW, didn't start out bad at all. Heyman was running it. You had the advent of CM Punk and a couple others. It was pretty good stuff. Not near as good as the original ECW, but it was good for, you know, for what it was. Where it went off the rails is when Vince come back and tried to take control. He changed things, pushed Lashley over Punk and Charles Heyman to leave, and then it went to crap.
Are you forgetting that the first episode of ECW on Sci-Fi Channel had a character called the Zombie?
The ECW Zombie.
I ain't putting ECW on the front of that.
Who was actually played by former ECW wrestler Tony DeVito, if I remember right.
Was that Tony DeVito?
I do believe it's Tony DeVito.
Let us not pretend that there is any wrestling organization, including the great Extreme Championship Wrestling, that have not had really, really goofy, bad gimmicks.
Here's what I'll say. The ECW Zombie showed up only to get caned mercilessly by the Sandman. So let's be honest, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was, I think that was a, here's an old WWE type of character trying to do this and the Sandman kills him. So works for me.
I had forgotten about the BWO showing up right before the main event.
Yeah.
I had forgotten all about that because Joey Styles actually slams the Simon Dean character.
Yes, he does.
I'm sorry. I have looked it up. Tim Arson was actually the ECW's.
Oh,
no.
Tony DeVito.
Yeah, no, man.
I was mistaken.
I would have been. Yeah. And I was beginning to worry because it was the main event. The main event was coming up, and I was worried. No Blue World Order. Come on.
Well, they had done so much to build up to pop up. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. ECW One Night Stand. The first one, a.k.a. the good one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Alex, what's your second pick?
My second pick is going back to WrestleMania 20. It's not just for the show itself, but for the ending, the moment of sheer joy of these two guys who were smaller wrestlers. They were not over the top, and some federations had actually considered them to be vanilla midgets who would never make anything out of themselves.
Yeah, they only considered one a vanilla midget, and it was weird.
Okay, the other one,
Hispanic, but
yeah, you know. El Hijo del Midget. I don't know.
Cinnamon midget.
Ooh, but cinnamon and vanilla are good together, and in this case, it's true. WrestleMania 20 not only had Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero both winning the respective world titles, which was just terrific. And say what you will about Benoit and what happened later on, but this was a shining moment, and this is how I choose to remember him.
I
agree.
Yeah. You had the first title win for John Cena to open the show.
Yeah, over the Big Show, I believe.
Over the Big Show, yep. And he cheated to do it, which I liked.
Oh, the way things have changed.
Yeah, yeah. You had that wonderful, awesome scientific encounter between Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, where Brock had announced he was leaving, and so had Goldberg.
With Stone Cold as the special referee.
With Stone Cold as the referee, simply because somebody has to be liked in this match.
And he's the only one left standing at the end of it.
This was such a good series.
I mean, that's when it worked, because it was a crowd pleaser before it was all said and done. Yeah. Because he stunned both of them, which is what the audience really wanted.
But with Guerrero taking on Kurt Angle and Benoit's match against basically DX, you had 45 minutes right there of solid wrestling and storytelling. And that's what makes WrestleMania 20 just so good. It seems to be all the tens for the WrestleManias, if it happens to fall on one of those three so far. There's been something amazing.
Well, I mean, I guess they look at it as a anniversary, so usually you try to do put a little extra twist on it or a little oomph into it, you know, even if it's subconscious. But I'll tell you, you're absolutely right about the Chris Benoit thing, and for that matter, the Eddie Guerrero thing, because that certainly didn't turn out to be a happy story either.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, and I don't know, I guess it's natural for some humans to do this. I know a lot of people who don't. Because why should these negative, bad things that ended up happening, how does that completely erase all the good stuff that happened before? Not everything is encapsulated into one package. There was all this stuff that happened before. That stuff still happened. We have, evidence of it. And that great moment of Eddie and Chris at the end of that show will live forever. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with what happened to Eddie later and what Chris did later.
Right.
I think this needs to be mentioned before we move on, at least.
You're going to talk about the Playboy evening gown match, aren't you?
I am going to talk about the other women's match.
Ah!
5 minutes of greatness between Victoria and Molly Holly. The hair versus title match. Yes, that is a great little match between those two and is clearly the high point of Victoria's career. One of the high points of Molly Holly's career. It really set her up to be a really great heel over the next year or so after that, before she left the company.
Something I never would have ever guessed. She was just so perfect as a cute, spunky little baby face, just like she was born to do it, and I just never would have ever bet you money that she could have been that effective a heel. And she did it.
Yeah. She was almost CM Punk Straight Edge Society ish in her craziness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She sort of was a precursor to that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If Ivory did the same thing too with the around Right to Censor, as we mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
we're gonna just keep bringing up Right to Censor, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
All right.
Bull Buchanan was underutilized in so many ways. We'll be talking about that in an upcoming episode of the Wrestling Roundtable.
If I could convince you guys to do an entire Bull Buchanan career retrospective episode of the show, I would be for that. So. he did just retire last month. So
did he really?
Yes. Wow. He's been working Georgia Indies for years now. So
wow, I'm in Georgia. I didn't know that. All right. Well, Bull Buchanan, we salute you. Yeah. Salute. Okay.
Salute.
All right. I, for my number two pick, and I might show a little bit of similarities in at least one of the matches that pops up on this one, but and it will also feature Right to Censor, come to think of it, SummerSlam 2000, which may also have had a TLC match on it.
It
had the first TLC match in it, a 19-minute piece of glory. But this also is a great card top to bottom, even though it doesn't necessarily look like it when you first saw it. I mean, it had another Undertaker-Kane match that didn't really go anywhere. It had the Cat versus Terry in a stink face match that they pushed really hard going into it that I never quite understood. And it had Right to Censor's first big victory as they were sort of cementing them as these annoying heels over Too Cool and Rikishi. But it also had a really great short match between X-Pac and Road Dogg that basically ended their tag team partnership. It had the great match with Jerry Lawler and Taz that ends with Jim Ross breaking a candy bowl over Taz's head. Of course, it has a Rock, Kurt Angle, Triple H main event. But the finest match here is Steve Blackman versus Shane McMahon, which is the most insane match ever wrestled. That involves
that's the climbing the rafters.
Yeah, that's a 25-foot fall by Shane McMahon, followed by a 25-foot elbow chop by Steve Blackman to regain his hardcore title from Shane McMahon.
You know, I just watched the High Flyers countdown. And while he wasn't on the actual list, they did that above and beyond thing of all of Shane's crazy stuff. And it was appropriate for – he was absolutely – I'm glad they singled that out.
And, of course, there was also an amazing – the longest match on the actual card, probably fittingly, 2 out of 3 falls, Chris Benoit versus Chris Jericho. Probably the finest encounter between those two men is awesome.
Fantastic.
So very good card, SummerSlam 2000, even though it may be – on paper wasn't as good as it actually turned out to be. It was a very good show. And the TLC match alone probably makes it deserve a spot here. But good card top to bottom there.
Why are we skimming over the Right to Censor versus Too Cool and Rikishi match?
Yeah.
It's Victoria's first pay-per-view appearance. So.
It was Victoria's first pay-per-view appearance. Yes.
As one
that's
of cool. The Godfather's hoes.
Former host, because he was now the good father.
He was.
He was the good father, yes.
This
he had seen the error of his ways.
Also, the match where Val Venus lost his Intercontinental title to, I want to say, China.
China in a tag team match.
Him and Trick.
That ain't the worst thing he ever lost. Hey!
Uh-oh.
Nope, it got cold that day. It got cold that
day. That's true. Kai and Tai! How come we're not talking about Kai and Tai anymore?
Because we haven't got to any of the match shows around 1998 actually important stuff. That'd be my guess. But we mentioned Taka. What more do you want?
Okay.
All right, John Morgan. You can find Kai and Tai's finest pay-per-view and pick it as your number 3 spot. Here.
No. I'm going to go away from WWE on my pick. I'm going to go with WCW. And one of their greatest pay-per-views, one of my very favorites. And it has a Japanese wrestler on it. And it has a Texas Tornado match. So and it's got lots of tag team stuff.
I feel like I'll be drunk after this now.
And it's got one of my favorite type of cage matches, which is the War Games. So I'm going with Great American Bash 89. Which had, among other things, the, in my opinion, greatest manager's match in the tuxedo match between Jim Cornette and Paulie Dangerously. It has the Steiner brothers, first actual teaming together in a Texas Tornado tag team match against the Varsity Club, another group that I quite liked. You had Sting and the Great Muta, which, I mean, I don't need to say anything more than that. Lex Luger in one of his better matches against Ricky Steamboat.
Luger was always better as a heel.
Yes, he was. Yeah. And the War Games, which was the Midnight Express and the Road Warriors and Steve Williams, Dr. Death, against the Samoan SWAT team and the Fabulous Freebirds.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, plus you had this little match of Ric Flair versus Terry Funk.
And yes, you had crazy Terry Funk and Ric Flair in a very ECW type of brawl.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, great show.
I have seen exactly one match on this card, and that's the main event, but that is a very good main event, and I love Gary Hart. I just want to reiterate that. Gary Hart is awesome.
I just would like to point out that during this pay-per-view, the Skyscrapers fought the Dynamic Dudes.
John Laurinaitis.
Oh, Shane Douglas. How many people did you team up with before you went to ECW? How many?
Won a tag team title with Ricky Steamboat.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He also dressed Hollywood up Blonde, in a bad right? luchador costume with Ricky Steamboat because it wasn't actually Shane Douglas, but we were pretending it was. They were wearing lucha costumes.
Who did they beat? I forget.
Who did Steamboat and Douglas beat?
Yeah.
Barry Windham and Dusty Rhodes.
That's right. Barry and Dusty. But that was a great team, you know?
Yeah, it was another great team, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Windham and Rhodes actually won them in a against Williams and Terry Gordy.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
And I actually left Center Stage Theater before that match took place.
Shame on you.
I missed that match.
Are you guys trying to get people drunk here tonight, guys?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. You know why? Because I'm 147 That's years it. Old. That's why.
Why do you think I chose this pay-per-view? It's got everything.
You know, the only thing missing from this match is Right to Censor.
That's true.
No, you had to...
And Kayentai.
And Kayentai, yeah.
And Paul Buchanan.
He didn't Right to Censor, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, that's fine.
Man, if we can manage to get a Truth Commission match onto this, we'll be good to go for the rest of the...
If anybody's even still listening to this show at this point, I'm very, very sorry for everything we do.
All right, Alex, who's your number three pick?
My number three pick is you know what? I'm kind of torn between two, but I'm going to go with this one. There was a time when everything WCW did turned to gold, and they put together an angle, a storyline that was so good that it encapsulated an entire year's worth of time, and it all culminated with Starrcade '97.
Boo!
Why, you got it on your list or what?
No, because '97's main event is terrible.
Starrcade '97's main event is terrible, and it's actually probably the beginning of the moment where we first begin to see a chink in the armor for WCW.
Chink in the armor. That main event killed WCW. It took
That did not kill. David Arquette, world champion. Helped kill WCW.
No, that was a stab. No. The already
Vince Russo is world heavyweight champion.
Yeah, it's like Howard the Duck, dude. It just didn't happen. And yet, none of us have a problem with the fact that for a while Vince McMahon was the world heavyweight champion of WWF. Anyway,
champion.
It's totally different because it was a believable storyline. I believed that Vince could do it. Because of all the help he had and all that in there, the story's telling.
Getting back to Starrcade '97. First of all, any show that starts with a 15-minute match between Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko.
Yeah.
Is, if you're a wrestling purist, that is a match to see. And if you're not a wrestling purist, two matches later you have Bill Goldberg versus Steve McMichael.
That's right.
Finest wrestler in the world, Steve McMichael. Five-star matches. I think all of his matches are on Meltzer's scale as 5 stars. I'm fairly sure.
Yeah, well, not so much the Buff Bagwell-Lex Luger match. But.
You know, say what you will, but when Mongo turned on...
Kevin Green.
And went with it, when Kevin Green and joined the Freebirds... Four Horsemen. Damn, what am I... Anyway, when he joined the Four Horsemen, when he turned on him and he had the briefcase, and I'm sitting there, I marked the hell out. I totally marked out.
Yeah, that was just one of those moments that you just didn't see coming. And honestly, the main event for this pay-per-view, which should have been Sting getting a perfectly clean pin on Hulk Hogan, was actually what should have happened. And instead, there was supposed to be a fast count on Sting by Nick Patrick, who apparently counts really slow for a fast pin.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, WCW trying quickly to jump on board the whole – Montreal Screwjob thing has Bret Hart come out, restart the match because he's not going to see someone get screwed over until he joins the NWO like that, 2 months later.
That is an example of where you have a great show and it is marred by its ending because that's all everybody wants to remember because it becomes this famous event because it was and let's face it, a total waste of Bret Hart.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, and I'm glad you reminded me that the rest of the show is very damn good, actually.
I would argue that the show hits its high point at about minute 15, and it's all downhill there after Guerrero.
You've got, what you got, know, you're a New York WWE guy.
You got Perry Saturn taking on Chris Benoit. You've actually got a very solid match between Dallas Page and Kurt Hennig for the U.S. title.
That is probably the second best match on the card, DDP and Hennig. So, yeah.
So.
This goes down in the wrestle crap category for me. Sorry, guys. Cannot recommend Starrcade 97. So.
He's wrong. It's okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Watch it.
You know what?
You've been outvoted 2-1.
What I can recommend?
What can you recommend?
Is a much better show from that same year.
Oh, thank you ever so much. That was nice of you.
A completely different company, not WWF, not WCW, but a little group of people in Philadelphia named ECW, and a card called Barely Legal. I am, of course, talking about the very first ECW pay-per-view, which is a great little thing with Terry Funk and Raven as the second main event after the Terry Funk Sandman and Stevie Richards main event that was supposed to be the main event, but also a fine damn match between Taz and Sabu that just needs to be watched. And let's go back to Kai and Tai.
Yay!
The great Sasuke, Gran Hamada, and some other guy that I can't remember the name of, versus who were then BWO Japan, Taka Michinoku, Terry Boy, and Dick Togo, all 2 out of 3 of them, future members of the American version of Kai and Tai, all 3 members of the Japanese version of Kai and Tai. So, very good card. And, of course, Rob Van Dam versus Lance Storm in an unannounced match that was very dang good. One of Landstrom's earliest. And there was also an Eliminators Dudley Boys match. So,
yeah.
Great card. For a little company that nobody thought could ever handle pay-per-view, this was a dang fine pay-per-view. And for the fact that Terry Funk was about 50 going into this thing. And
seriously, Terry Funk is 147
years. Yeah, he is now. He wrestled in 2 different main event matches. That in and of itself is pretty impressive. So, I really enjoyed Bayley Liga. So, opinions?
Yeah.
On my list. Yeah, it was on my list.
So. Yeah, that one and I'm drawing a blank off the top of my head and I don't want to go look at the list, but the, one where Bam Bam won the championship.
ECW
championship. Those are the 2 best ECW ones for me.
Yeah, this is one of the top. I have another one on my list that is not either of those. But there's another one that's very good in my mind. We'll get to that later, though.
Oh, well, no, there are definitely others very good. Those are just my top 2.
Yeah. All right.
I'll probably agree with you on the other one, yeah.
So, Bayley Liga, folks. Everybody should watch it. And I believe that puts us back to you, John Morgan.
Yes. And I'm going to choose Fully Loaded 2000, which took place at Reunion Arena in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, take a drink.
It's kind of one of those hidden gem type of ones. It was obviously not one of the major pay-per-views. It was not even one that they even have anymore. But
I was really confused why you selected this, by the way, until you said Texas. And then I was like, oh.
No, because it's got a great lineup. It really does. I mean, you've got The Rock versus Chris Benoit for the WWE Championship. You've got Last Man Standing between Chris Jericho and Triple H. You have The Undertaker versus Kurt Angle.
That was a good match. But
Steel Cage, Rikishi versus Val Venus.
That was a good match, surprisingly. Yeah. So.
APA versus Edge and Christian. And I like everything Edge and Christian ever did.
This is Perry Saturn versus Eddie Guerrero near the beginning of Insane Perry Saturn, though. So
yeah, that was yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Al Snow and Taz was good. You know, I mean, I not those two guys. I could watch any day.
And Lowdown were on this card, so that always does make me happy. So
yeah, and the mixed tag match of the Hardy Boys and Lita versus TNA with Trish worked for me. You know?
Are we completely missing out on the fact that Taka Michinoku opened the show?
It was on Heat, but still, like, yeah. That's basically the same thing as their opening
Dan
show.
Dan Funaki was also on the Heat before this.
Yeah, he was.
Nice.
There you go.
Honestly, Tommy, I'm telling you, it's one of those that kind of, you know, sidebar, you know, one shot things. I got to catch up to the side, but really, it's really a good matchup. It's fun to watch. I recommend anybody go on WWE Network and watch this, because that's really what the WWE's network is also for. Not just the ones that you're going to go see WrestleMania 3. Everybody knows they're going to go watch WrestleMania 3. Everybody knows they're going to go see, you know, WrestleMania 17, whatever. These type of shows are the ones that you'll miss out unless somebody points it out to you. Go watch it. You'll enjoy it.
This is actually one that I want to look at again. If I remember correctly, this was 2000. So
yeah.
The Rock as champion versus Benoit. That was one of Benoit's first title matches, as I recall.
That is Benoit's very first title match.
Very first. Because he's got Shane McMahon in his corner.
Yeah.
And they put together like a 20-some-odd minute match that was just terrific.
Is this the one with the Benoit wins, but they restart the match because he was cheating, and then The Rock wins?
I think it was the second one that they did with that.
Okay. I could not remember.
Yeah.
This card, by the way, Val Venus versus Rikishi, is the hidden gem on this card. I'm not.
Yeah, absolutely, because I didn't expect that match. Much out of it. I like both Rikishi and Val, but I didn't expect them to almost steal the show. Yeah, you know,
they were,
and here's the deal. Here's another reason why it was important to me at the time, and still important to me, is
Trish Stratus.
Hey, well, there's always that, and Lita. Trust me, I love me some Lita. But here's the deal. It was the first real show that's really highlighting the young new Turks that they were really kind of give the push at the time.
And you point that out, but Trish Stratus is actually the person who spends the most time in the ring anywhere on this show, so around the ringside area.
Yeah,
she has one 15 minutes, just, and another 15.
That's minutes. True. Don't get me wrong; I don't have any problem looking at Trish Stratus.
One where she actually wrestles in, sort of. Because she didn't really wrestle at the time. And the other was she's just with Val Venus.
Yes, but Trish and Lita turned out into a great feud and eventually, and I love them both. By the way, a little sidebar here. I've said like three times now I've mentioned this the newest countdown with the High Flyers.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly was okay with the list. It was a good list. I could have, you know, changed names and maybe swapped out a couple. But here's the deal. What really impressed me and why I really was happy with the WWE Universe voting on WWE.com was that Lita was number 3.
Oh, no spoilers, dude.
I'm sorry.
I haven't watched it yet.
I'm sorry. But
I tell you,
that should be more incentive for you to watch it.
Right.
They gave Lita this great, she should be on there. I was happy that she was on there, and it made my night, actually.
Let me test the credibility of the WWE Universe. Is Scorpio on the list anyway?
He is mentioned by, or in just the overview, by Xavier Woods, who that's his favorite wrestler, so that's no surprise.
At least someone mentioned it, because if you go to the High Flyers, there's only one innovator of all things high flying, and that was Two Court Scorpio.
Yeah,
he's still doing it 30 years later, it feels like.
So he did get this little sidebar thing where Xavier is talking about the High Flyers, and then he singles out Two Cold, Flash Funk, but, you know. What he called him because that's WWE, but
whatever
you know,
his name is today. Scorpio and Flash both in WWE. But.
Yeah. Now there's a couple of people though that did get left off that really surprised me. But
fair enough. All right, let's move on. Alex, who do you have for your number 4 pick?
Since I haven't thrown an ECW show on here yet, I figured I would add this one from 99. It's Anarchy Rules 99. And the big deal on this one was Taz, as the world champion, is on his way out of ECW. And the ECW crowd, which is smarter than your average wrestling crowd, knows it. So he's going into a match with Masato Tanaka, and Mike Awesome shows up. And you've got this great three-way battle, three-way dance for the world title from ECW. And Taz is the first one pinned. And the crowd, instead of going crazy, they stand up and applaud.
It's a great
and
match too.
Give Taz this wonderful way to go. But, I mean, with a show that starts off with Lance Storm and Jerry Lynn, you've got Tajiri, Super Crazy, and Little Guido doing what they do best. And the show finishes. I mean, like, the world title's not even the main event.
It's not even the second main event. There are two
matches. It's not even the second main event, yeah. Because you've got Tommy Dreamer and Raven defending the tag team titles, and Rob Van Dam and Balls Mahoney
tearing down the house for 20 minutes for the ECW World Television title.
This is the card that if you ever wonder why the heck Balls Mahoney was a guy that was important to ECW, that you should watch, because it's yeah. Balls Mahoney at his finest. Or Cojones, if you're a TNA fan.
Ah.
For his, like, three appearances. Yeah. They had to give him a new name. But, yes, Anakin was 99.
Actually, that is true. You are right, and that single is one of his probably his finest performance. But just like the Sandman, one of the best things about Balls in ECW was his entrance to ACDC.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Big Balls.
Big Balls, yeah. But one of the things is, what I find hysterical is when you look at ECW and you have this stereotypical concept of what ECW is, and it's garbage wrestling and it's hitting people over the head with things and whatnot. Look at the bookend on this card, and you start with Lance Storm and Jerry Lynn going for 17 minutes, and you finish with Rob Van Dam taking on Balls Mahoney.
Yeah.
And it is just so completely different from your prototypical concept. And this one's got Just Incredible and Sabu.
Right.
You know, and...
Well, that's the thing about ECW that a lot of people who don't really know enough about ECW and didn't watch it regularly or, you know, whatever, get wrong about ECW. Because, yes, it is very prominently hardcore wrestling, the tables, all the barbed wire, all that stuff. Is definitely a very major part of what it was, but it was not just that. And it was never just that.
Yeah, and I had like 47 chairs, and I don't remember any tables. So. It might have been one.
Exactly. That was innovation. No one had ever in wrestling ever before had ever used a steel chair before that night.
I believe.
Ever.
Ever.
But yeah, Anakin Ruiz 99. That the world heavyweight title match in that show is incredibly good because I think Taz goes out like 3 minutes in.
Yeah, I mean it's a really stiff match.
And then of course it's back to Tanaka and Awesome. And anytime you have Tanaka and Awesome in the ring, it's
a good match. My God, you said it was a really stiff match. When was the Awesome and Tanaka's match not stiff?
I was gonna say those guys drove their elbows in each other's skulls over and over again.
I was worried for Tanaka's life more than once with some of those freaking bumps he took.
Yeah.
All right. I am going to choose for my next pick a show we talked about almost ad nauseum 2 weeks ago. King of the Ring 1998. This is, of course, the match with the infamous Undertaker versus Mankind Hell in a Cell match and the Kane-Steve Austin First Blood match that gave Kane his first championship. And, of course, that Undertaker versus Mankind match is why we're really here. That Hell in a Cell match is one of the defining moments of the WWE Attitude Era. But it's part of a really solid card right down to the opening match, which features the Headbangers and Taka Michinoku versus Kai and Tai. So which, by the way, is actually a really, really good match.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dang it. I should have said indeed.
Indeed.
Yes.
You should have. I still think them losing Men's Tao and Dick Togo from Kai and Tai was one of the biggest mistakes WWE ever did, because those two are just amazing wrestlers, and they showed it hard when they lost.
Oh, heck yeah, no, I should have stayed at the group. Yeah, instead of a tag team, a group. Yeah.
I'm still amazed that they did not give us Ken Shamrock versus Dan Severn as the King of the Ring final in here, but Ken Shamrock versus The Rock was equally good, especially when you consider that The Rock, who up until this point barely had to work, it seemed like, went like 52 minutes of wrestling or something like that, and that's 50 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
between his semi-main event and his main event for that King of the Ring. And there's a nice little X-Pac-Owen Hart match thrown in the middle of that. Also, Head wrestled in a match, but unless you guys want to really talk about that, this also featured the new Midnight Express, which everyone knows was far above the original Midnight Express.
You're dead to me, Al Helms.
I had to say it just to get that reaction.
No, you didn't have to say it. You didn't. Have to say it.
I had forgotten. Jesus, Bart. I don't know what the problem is.
Jeez, yeah. whatever happened to Bart Gunn? Oh, wait, yeah. I had forgotten that Ken Shamrock. Yeah. we should be catching up to him because he got knocked hell into the future. I had forgotten that Ken Shamrock had won the King of the Ring. That's hysterical. I'd also forgotten that for a while Robert Parker was Tennessee Lee.
Yes.
Yes, he was with Jeff Jarrett. That was right after Jeff Jarrett lost the Road Dogg for him to form the New Age Outlaws and suddenly become a rapper instead of the secret country singer.
Yeah.
Oh, the roadie. King of the Ring 98, it's more than just The Undertaker versus Mankind, but that's damn fine, too. So.
It's 50 minutes of The Rock.
It is, and he's really good, surprisingly, in 98. He actually had moves back then. Who knew?
Yeah.
All right, let's go one more round. Let's make it a lightning round, and then we'll rattle off a few Oscarans. So, back to you, John Morgan.
I think I may go with... I was going to go with No Mercy 1999 because of the first TLC, but you know what? I'm going to go with WrestleMania 3. Yeah. It's, you know, maybe a bit of a cliche, maybe, or whatever at this point, but you know what? It's there for a reason. And really, there's two particular matches that stand out, but you know what? It had some other good matches on it, too, that, you know, usually aren't discussed as much because, you know, these other two get all the attention. It's got what many people consider the greatest actual wrestling match of all time between Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage, and I'm hard to pray that there's anything better than it, as much as maybe some that tie it, as it just truly was the precursor of the new style. It changed things forever because the young guys that watched it at the time, like your Christians and your Edges and so on and so forth, It influenced what they wanted to do in the ring. And that is that nonstop action, moves, you know, going to another move and there's something always going on. And that match just was amazing. I was already a fan of both guys going into the match, but I was even a bigger fan of them going out of it. And that's an accomplishment. And you know what? The main event itself is special. It's important. Mm-hmm. It truly is no bones about it. Is what truly finally made WWE the top, you know, global force that it became.
Here's what I always say about the main event of WrestleMania 3. It is the by far most important negative star match of all time. That's what it is. Well, the match is terrible.
The match is terrible. But, you know, as we both know, all three of us know, mm-hmm. It isn't always about work rate. It isn't always about five-star matches.
When Hogan's involved, you can't add it.
Yeah, no, you can't. And at that point in Andre's, you couldn't.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah.
But it was an important passing of the guard. Andre had been the biggest star in wrestling forever and ever, you know, all over the world. He was a worldwide star before there, you know, that was ever common. And it was a way to, I mean, Hogan was, you know, at the top. And he was big and he was huge, but this was a sort of a true handing off of the baton and saying, okay, you're the big guy now. And it had tons of drama. You know, let's face it, regardless of how good the Steamboat and Savage match was, everybody was there to see that match.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, you know, and the only, again, this, you know, we bring up this stuff that happens afterwards. I think that should have been the end for Andre.
Probably, yeah.
I think that should have been the end, and they could have had a little special send off or something like that, or maybe him turn on him and have one last great match as a babyface, something. But that long drawn out process where he just sort of faded out, and then it was hard to see him work. But right there, he was at the center of maybe the biggest match in wrestling history.
I don't think I can let WrestleMania 3 go by without mentioning the perfection of having Jake Roberts being managed by Alice Cooper.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Even if he lost, still beautiful.
Yeah. WrestleMania 3 was certainly the pinnacle of WWE for me. Even if they had bigger numbers later on in their thing, the simple fact is that when you think WrestleMania, you think of the body slam. You think of the elbow drop that missed. or attempted elbow drop, or you think about all these different things, and you know, Harley Race versus the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that had been an undercard match, right? Yeah,
right. I mean, two of the biggest of all. I mean, the biggest guy in Mid-South history ever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Harley Race, I mean, the NWA World Champion, you know, the guy for years.
The real question is, who would think it would be an undercard match that lasted under 4 minutes? But, those two.
But that was what they did. I mean,
yeah, especially WrestleMania.
Yeah. But, you know, that was when it was just as important to have the celebrities there as it was to have the wrestlers there. And I WrestleMania 3 to this day, I'd sit down and watch it again.
Oh yeah. Piper and Adonis.
Oh,
yeah. Right. Foundation and Danny Davis versus the British Bulldogs, Tito Santana.
They're not all winners.
Hey, yeah. hey, it had midgets.
There were midgets facing off against King Kong Bundy and Hillbilly Jim, weren't
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. Haiti Kid and Little Tokyo. Lord Littlebrook.
Lord Littlebrook, yeah.
Yeah. Little Beaver.
And Haiti Kid, Little Beaver, and Little Haiti Tokyo Kid. And Little
And Hercules got to wrestle.
Hercules versus Billy Jack Haynes in a, you know, classic muscle man match. You know?
And that whole thing, one of the great things about WrestleMania 3 is that every match had a specific storyline, with the possible exception of the midget match.
Yeah.
It had a storyline going into it.
That whole thing of who had the better Full Nelson.
Yeah, the Full
with
Nelson.
Hercules.
A classic angle for wrestling. You know, they're arguing over who's the strongest guy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. And Bobby was there, you know, in that match. And then Bobby actually came out with Harley Race with the Fabulous Moolah.
Yep.
That was great.
Here's my comment. Tom Zenk was in the first match, and they still managed to not ruin the pay-per-view with that. So. Oh, Tom Zenk. Wow, he's terrible.
But hey, you know, like you said, the Hart Foundation and British Bulldog. And then there was the Dream Team versus Rougeau Brothers. Was a good match.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, worked for me. It's good. It's a good show.
Alex, what's your fifth pick?
I am going to go with Survivor Series 98, Deadly Games, which is the tournament to crown a new WWF World Champion. It is wonderful because it has one of the best long match swerves as far as throughout the entire show. We're basically told over and over again, Mankind is the corporation's choice for world champion. And there's this new young up-and-comer, The Rock, who is, you know, I mean, yeah, he was kind of a heel for a while with The Nation, but suddenly the crowd's behind him, and he's picking up steam, and he's picking up steam, and he's picking up steam, and bam, main event, Rock, Mankind, and the corporation turns on Mankind.
Yep.
It made The Rock. It solidified Mankind. This was awesome. And, yeah, it's a year after the Montreal Screwjob. But in my opinion, this is a much cooler pay-per-view.
This is the perfect example of Russo booking at its best. That's what it is.
At its best. At its best.
When Russo, it was on, this is what you got.
Yeah.
Also, it is probably the only tournament in the history of wrestling that Dwayne Gill got to wrestle in a match in. So.
I would say he got to wrestle in it.
But 30 whole seconds in that match.
30 whole seconds of getting his hand in. But he later would return as Gilbert.
Yes.
And become one of the longest reigning light heavyweight champions in
the longest in WWE.
Yeah, well, yeah. When they retire the title for like 8 months during a reign, that's what happens. But yes. You know.
I just love when the fireworks go off when the pyro goes off for Dwayne Gill.
The little sparklers in
it. And, when he wrestled against Mankind, he did this big announcement, this introduction. Yeah. Yeah. Of this returning superstar.
Yeah.
And Dwayne Gill comes out, and there's pyro, and he jumps 5 feet in the air.
Yeah. Eric Youngstar. Mm-hmm. I will point out, though, that despite Dwayne Gill lasting less than a minute with Mankind, not the shortest match on the card.
Not the shortest match on the card.
As I believe it was one Rock Bottom, 1-2-3, Big Boss Man loses to The Rock.
Big Boss Man losing to The Rock, and then later Boss Man coming out and trying to help Ken Shamrock defeat The Rock. Not a good night for Boss Man, but that's okay, because later on we find out.
Yeah. Oh man. This I just love this pay-per-view, and I love it because I was not prepared for the swerve.
Right. Yep. That's always best whenever they surprise you.
My number five pick, and I'm picking this one. It was about my number eight, I think, on my list, actually. But if I'm going to take my long shot final pick, I'm going to take my long shot final pick. And sure. That final pick is WCW Greed. This is the very last WCW pay-per-view.
Okay, no wonder I didn't recognize it.
And I'm going to be honest. The main event is Scott Steiner versus DDP, Falls Count Anywhere, and it isn't very good.
But it was 14 minutes long. Yes.
The semi-main event is Dusty and Dustin versus Flair and Jarrett in a Kiss My Ass match, and it also wasn't very good. But the rest of this card showed signs that WCW, if it would have survived, could have been a really great company. As over 45 to 50 minutes of the show was spent just on cruiserweight matches. Jason Jett was getting a huge push in the opening match against Kiwi in his, I think, third appearance on WCW television. They had the crowning of the WCW Cruiserweight Tag Team Champions as Elix Skipper and Kid Romeo, one of the greatest unsung teams in wrestling history, beat Mysterio and Kidman. And then there is an epic match between Shane Helms and Chavo Guerrero where Sugar Shane Helms with the Nitro Girls won the WCW Cruiserweight Championship with the Vertebreaker, still one of the greatest wrestling moves of all time. There's also a pretty good Sean Stasiak, Bam Bam Bigelow match in here. Team Canada beat Conan and Hugh Morris, which should have been a setup for a tag team match against what was probably the most surprising and interesting match they threw in the card, where Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo defended their titles against Totally Buffed. Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell, I believe, who had a 9-minute or so promo before the match that lasted less than a minute as they basically came in, knocked Luger and Bagwell down, hit two Shauntaun bombs on him, and double pinned them for a 1-2-3. Just like completely squashed, Totally Buff. It's an amazing match. It is probably the high point of Sean O'Hare's career, and
sadly, the highest point of Buff Bagwell's too.
Yeah, quite possibly. Watching in hindsight, it was a little sad there, but just a great show. And there's a really good U.S. title match, which is something crazy to me that Rick Steiner could put on a good U.S. title match in 2001 with Booker T, as Rick Steiner had seen much better days by this point in his career.
Well, you know, I'll have to look that up because, I mean, you know, one of the things that, well, the most thing that appealed to me there after a while, for a long while in the WCW, was the Cruisers.
Yep.
And but the fact that they would actually finally recognize that, though, was a day late and $1 million short.
Yeah, this is, to me, the...
About $10 to $12 million short. Right.
Yeah. That if the Bischoff deal to buy this company had succeeded and they'd remained on TNT and TBS, I think we would have gotten a very good WCW product by the end of
2000. I just kept waiting for somebody to recognize because, you know, they became a one-trick pony, and the aggravating thing about that is that they weren't really a one-trick pony. They just ignored all the rest of the tricks. They just kept trying to go back to the wheel on the NWO when everybody was watching, you know, Rey Mysterio and Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho and Eddie Guerrero and all these guys. That's who we were watching.
And the WCW Cruiserweight Tag Team Tournament was just brilliant, and they introduced a terrific team. That was Air Paris and Air Styles.
It was AJ Styles. Yeah, Air Styles was their tag team name.
Yeah, it was the tag team, yeah.
AJ Styles. And supposedly they were meant to get a major push after this thing.
Yeah, and it looked good for them. I had actually seen the two of them in some of the Georgia Independents. Mm-hmm. Before they got the bump to WCW, which at that point had sort of become a Georgia independent in itself. So it was kind of cool seeing them on television. I thought that there was a real possibility for it up until the moment that everything kind of fell apart. But I loved Lance Storm and Mike Awesome together. I thought that was always terrific.
Team. Yeah.
Jason Jett, by the way, who of course was Easy Money also in ECW, holds a horrific distinction by being in the first match of this card, as he is the only man to wrestle at the last pay-per-view for ECW and the last pay-per-view for WCW.
So, jinx!
Wow.
Yeah, jinx!
Harsh for Easy Money / Jason Jett, who I believe did not get signed to WWE, or if he did not last very long in Heartland.
Yeah, no, he was not part of the 10.
He definitely didn't make... Well, they hired like 35, but only 10 made it to TV immediately, but yeah. But, yeah, I highly recommend Greed. Check it out. There's an Ernest Miller match in there with Canyon that is so at best. But the first 2 hours of this card is really solid and really kind of makes you go, this promotion could have been really good if they'd got
up until you watch the last 40 minutes of it. And you go, oh, okay.
I remember now.
With what the Big Bang was supposed to be, which was the next pay-per-view, it was the Big Bang. It was supposed to be the... basically 14th reboot in 2 years of the card. From what I understand, the rumors are that Dustin Rhodes was maybe going to be champion by the end of it. So think about that one. But they were trying to move away from all of their established stars at the time to focus on quote-unquote younger talent. I don't know if Dustin Rhodes really counts as younger talent. But
I'm sitting there wondering about that one, but okay.
But, yeah.
Dustin? I love Dustin.
I love Dustin, too, but Dustin Rhodes is Dustin Rhodes is not someone you make the champion.
No,
Dustin Rhodes is Goldust, maybe, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that.
All right, let's get some also-rans. Let's throw out a few here. John Morgan, what do you have left?
Well, I've just got two, but they're two big ones. First, I mean, we got to mention really the first wrestling pay-per-view really ever in a Starrcade 1 or Starrcade 83 or Starrcade.
Yeah.
Up and down, it's just a pretty fantastic card. In a way, it's sort of a, since they, you know, pretty soon after this, WCW sort of rises up, you know, and of course WWE became what it was. This was kind of really the only pay-per-view, or really one of the few pay-per-views that really sort of was a old-school thing. I mean, it was like an old-school territory type of thing. I mean, the people that were on, the matches that were on there, and from other areas, too. Like, I mean, one of the matches on there is a Duel of the Butcher and Carlos Colon, which I had always heard and read about their long, long feud, but I'd never seen any of it. And here I got to actually see a match between the two. And then, you know, Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine, everybody know, you know, the dog collar match is fantastic.
John Morgan, kind of remind you, this is the quick list.
Yeah, okay. I'll just real quick. And great tag team match with Jay Youngblood, Ricky Steamboat against the Briscoes. And, of course, Ric Flair wins the championship again from Holly Race.
Yeah.
Starts off on that. The other one really... to me is a is on my list because of one match really and that's all, and that is Royal Rumble 92.
Yeah,
Royal Rumble 1992, of course, the one where Ric Flair went all the way through and won the title. It's one of the greatest moments for my personal love of wrestling and Ric Flair. And I just never get tired of it.
I don't know what you're
with
talking
a tear
about.
In my eye, this
with
is
a tear greatest. In my eye.
The way through, he was number three.
Number three.
Fine, be technical.
He did not have to wrestle for the first 2 minutes of that show. So.
Yeah. Neither did Ted DiBiase. He was thrown out.
Yeah.
I love 92. Was on my list. And that was one of those times when I started to sit there and go, hey, Hulk Hogan's kind of a bad guy. Why are we cheering for him? Because he helps Ric Flair eliminate Sid Justice.
Yep.
And Sid, you had one more, John Morgan?
That's it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Alex, what you got?
I had 92 on there as well. I love that one. Royal Rumble 2005. Watch it so that you can see Vince McMahon blow up his legs while trying to slide into the ring.
Yep.
Both of them. It's awesome.
Yeah. SummerSlam 92, Brett and Davey in London. It's a must-watch for wrestling fans. Great American Bash 1990, The Birth of Sting. WrestleMania 20 for Brett and Owen in the ladder match. And, of course, WrestleMania 30 for Daniel Bryan.
Yeah. I actually had WrestleMania 30 on my list as well. So, I also had the Royal Rumble from 2000 on my list, mostly for an epic main event between Triple H and Mick Foley. NXT Arrival, which also I put on this list, mostly for a opening card match between Cesaro and Sami Zayn, which needs to be watched by everyone ever. Guilty as Charged 2001, which is the last ECW pay-per-view, which, much like Greed, showed a good company trying to rebuild in interesting ways that never really came to fruition.
I wonder what a psychologist would think about the fact that ECW's last and WCW's last pay-per-view is on his list.
Who knows? One of my oddball picks, Armageddon 2005, which features one of Batista's finest matches as he and Rey Mysterio teamed up to take on Big Show and Kane, which is an epic, like, battle between the two, and has a really good Hell in a Cell match between Undertaker and Orton, and a Chris Benoit Booker T, I believe it's match 4 in their second Best of 7 series that happened on WWE TV, as opposed to WCW TV. And Eminem and Mexico is cool, so good card there. WrestleMania 21 was on my list, Batista, Triple H, Cena, versus JBL needs to be mentioned. It's the beginning of a new era. I chose Invasion not because they had the best Invaders, but because there were some really good matches in there. Jeff Hardy versus RVD alone is great. And I chose WrestleMania 30 and SummerSlam from this year as well, which I think are both going to be remembered well in years to come. So that is my complete list. That brings it to an end, folks. That was a lot of wrestling matches and a lot of time to blow on WWE Network. And how much does that cost, Alex?
I believe it's $9.99.
Are you sure?
I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, $9.99.
WWE would just tell us more often.
I wish it would.
I tell you. Anyway, before we go, I think it's time for some recommendations really quick because we're already long in the tooth. John Morgan, what do you have to recommend today?
Well, this time, Ed, actually, timing-wise, very good recommendation for everybody. I've talked about it, I think, two times already, but this time I have a special offer to give you. I don't know exactly how much longer it lasts, but if anybody wants to try out Winter World Number 1 by Chuck Dixon and the great Butch guys as well, it's free on Comixology. Go get it. Just put in the comics code in all caps, and it's totally free.
Yep, just look on the front page if the offer is still up by the time this episode goes up, and there should be a list of free comics that you basically can get.
Also on there, there's the Batgirl sale going on, 99 cents per issue. Mm-hmm. If you haven't ever read Nightwing Number 8 by Chuck Dixon and Greg Land, go get it. It's one of the greatest stories ever told with Dick Grayson or Barbara Gordon. It's weirdly, for whatever reason, DC has never put it in a collection anywhere, and it's very difficult to find the original issue. So, and of course,
it has been collected, but the collection itself costs almost $100.
Right. Well, okay. So there you go. So anyway, if you want to read this story, and I recommend that you do, it's a great, great story. Go buy it. 99 cents. What can you lose?
Yep. Both good choices. Alex, what do you have for us today?
It's out on Blu-ray right now, and it's one of the best movies of the year. Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Woo!
Plain and simple. Go get it.
Yes.
I wish there was more on it as far as extras go, and I'm really bummed that there's no Marvel short. But I can get over that because S.H.I.E.L.D. is back on. So watch. Go if you haven't seen Captain America: Winter Soldier. We can't be friends. All right.
Yeah, and go watch the first episode. Go watch the first episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's good.
Oh, my God, the feels. Holy
it's
cow.
It's got the Absorbing Man. That's all I'm going to say.
It's got the Absorbing Man and Xena, Warrior Princess.
That's true.
Yeah. And it had Dum Dum Dugan.
Xena versus the Absorbing Man.
Dum Dum Dugan.
Yeah, and Dum Dum Dugan. Oh, my gosh. You want to talk about a mark-out moment. Yeah. When the Howling Commandos appear in the first 2 minutes of the episode.
Absolutely.
Choice.
And now it's making me think they're going to be part of this Peggy Carter series.
I hope so.
I would assume they're going to be there at least a bit. Yeah. We'll see. My recommendation this week. First, I want to make a quick reminder that I still have the Pulpsploitation Kickstarter going.
Woo!
Look at
it. Now. Everybody order it.
Yeah, about 2 more weeks. Get in there, get in on that, and help make that book possible, and get some cool swag in the process.
So, Airboy!
Yep, I got Airboy. There's some Gunmaster in there. There is some Black Bat in there, and Ooh. There is some Taboo of the Jungle in there. So, yeah, definitely go give that one a look. And we actually talked about what my other recommendation of the day was just a second ago. I was going to mention Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2 just kicking off. Everybody should go watch that. It is on Hulu Plus now. It will be on Hulu everywhere next week. Go watch that. It's good stuff. It's the best superhero show on TV now because they actually have supervillains. So yeah. There you go.
Crusher Creel, everybody.
Yeah. A very solid episode that does tons to set up a really interesting looking second series, a season of that show. So. Mm-hmm. Everybody check out some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All right.
Yeah.
And that wraps it up, I believe, guys. Just a reminder to head over to esowrestling@gmail.com if you have any comments for us. Or you can check the phone number in the notes on this episode as well and give that a call. And let us know your thoughts on this fine show. Other than that, all that's left to say, I believe, is Mockamania Forever.
Right to censor.
Tie and tie!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.